Well, good morning, everyone. And thank you for inviting me to speak again at your wonderful church. It's always a joy to be here. Well, the title of the lesson in the program is not the title of the lesson. I should just, every time I speak somewhere, just have a title of it's a mystery. So, have some latitude. But the title will be Friend or Foe, Help or Hindrance. So, a question. Have you gotten everything you want in life? Every job you've went after, every relationship that you've pursued, every candidate that you voted for? Well, maybe a few people have gotten everything out of life, but most of us sometimes don't get everything that we want. That we meet situations and people, they come before us and perhaps present problems to us, and we have an opportunity whether to see them as a friend or a foe, whether to see them as a help or a hindrance. Because what's out there is out there. But how we deal with it and how we live with it is in here. So right now, I think most of us would agree that we have some passion and division going on in our country right now. So how to live in that, how to deal with that? On the one hand, we have the bigger picture of politics. On the other hand, we have the picture of where we live, family, friends, our people we go to church with, our coworkers, our community. So to be able, on one hand, in the larger political arena, to stand in our integrity, to have passion around our beliefs, to stand for justice, whatever side of the aisle we may be on. But on the other hand, in those relationships, to find a way to get past foe and hindrance, because that's the place where we live, right there. How do we do that? How do we do that? How do we label it? How do we name it? 3 years ago, I decided to take a trip to Graceland. Anyone ever been to Graceland? Oh, what a thrill. What a thrill for someone who played hooky from high school to go see Elvis Presley in Fort Hood. So I made my reservations at the Heartbreak Hotel. Anyone ever stay there? On Lonely Street. Yes. Well, and it was quite costly, but I was so excited. I arrived at the hotel and, oh my gosh, the lobby was fantastic. I think there was a Cadillac in the lobby and his motorcycle and memorabilia everywhere. Music playing, his music, of course. And then I headed up to my room, and as I got off the elevator, I'm looking around, and there are these old concrete walls, hadn't been painted for a while. I opened the door to my very costly room to find kitchen tile on the floor, pull down the bed, and you could read through the sheets, and I'm going, what is this? What is this? Of course, the hotel was built in the 60s and had never been refurbished at that time. So later that afternoon, there was a shuttle going into Bale Street in Memphis. And we were all lined up, ready to get on the shuttle. And there were people there from 7 different countries. Isn't that amazing? Standing in line, 7 different countries. So people were talking about the hotel and this and that, and when it came to me, I said, well, I'm a little disappointed. You know, all the money we spent, I expected something a little more upscale. And the woman standing next to me was from Switzerland. And she said, "Oh, but just think of the history here. My gosh, it's so exciting. Just think, you are staying at the Heartbreak Hotel on Lonely Street. Why are you complaining?" Wow, what a gift that was. Because that changed the way I looked at the rest of my stay there. Not as a hindrance, because the room wasn't exactly what I had expected, but it helped me to really enjoy and to savor all of it. Reading the paper through the sheets, whatever it was the Heartbreak Hotel. So I'll always remember that woman for helping me make that switch, that change. So what are some of the tools that we can use to be in a place with family, friends, our community, right now in this seemingly difficult time? Well, I believe the most important how-to always is prayer and meditation. And then another tool is to abide by Jesus' words and agree with our adversary. The third is not to avoid what's going on. And the fourth is just to remember who in the heck we all are. Prayer. I think one of the most beautiful illustrations of what prayer is, and we know prayer is always seeing things from the very highest. Seeing things from the very highest perspective. And it's the story of the logger in the Northwest. You know, when they cut down trees, they have made, what are the things they float down the river? The platforms that they put together, the logs they tie together to move the rest of the trees down the river. A raft. Well, thank you. That was the easy word. The raft. And the raft is made out of logs that are tied together. So occasionally, of course, they get all bunched up and the logs can't get through. So the novice logger walks out on the raft and looks around and tries to figure out where things are bunched up. Why aren't things getting through here? But the experienced logger climbs the tallest tree, peruses the situation, and goes, "Ah, that's where it is, right there. I know where to go and fix it now." And it's the same way with prayer. That when we're in the weeds, we don't know how to fix things. When we're in the weeds, we don't know how to repair those relationships. When we're in the weeds, we don't know how to look beyond disagreements. But when we have spent the time that we need in prayer and meditation and see things clearly from that highest perspective, then we can see how to get beyond those challenges, those differences. Prayer and meditation, always the first how-to of everything we do. And then to agree with our adversary. Now, that doesn't mean to just roll over and play dead. And I'd like to read the scripture verse on that, and it's from Matthew 5, 25. And these are Jesus' words. He says, "Agree with your adversary quickly while you are in the way with him, lest at any time the adversary will deliver you to the judge, and the judge deliver you to the officer, and you will be cast into prison." And prison, of course, is right in here. And Charles Fillmore, our co-founder, speaks on this further. He says, a mental state of resistance indicates an unyielding personal will, that evil has no power except that which we give it with our thoughts. And resisting evil is a way of affirming its power. A positive, fearless attitude in facing the appearance of evil overcomes it. And this attitude comes from the understanding that evil has no power. But I love that. Not resisting, not giving it all our power and energy, but a positive, fearless attitude. Again, doesn't mean rolling over and playing dead. It doesn't mean giving up what we believe in. But it means, especially when we come into disagreements with those that we are close to, and how we interact with that, how we come into agreement, standing in our own integrity and truth, but at the same time not losing the power, but rather keeping a positive, fearless attitude as we stand where we are. Several years ago, when the stock market took the terrible dip, I think that was, what, 2005 or 6? Oh, 8. My God, time flies. 8. Okay. 2008. And there's the story of the woman who had a very good life, played tennis twice a week, traveled whenever she wanted to. Life was good, never worried about money at all. And then all of a sudden, she woke up one morning and her whole life had changed because her financial picture had changed. And she said for many weeks, she was resisting, she was bitter, she was angry. And then she read those words and really pondered them, the deeper meaning, to agree with her adversary, not to give it power. And she began to look for ways that she could somehow come into agreement with her situation then. So she sold her large home, and she found a small apartment. She put her table, her dining room table, she said, right in front of this big window where the light just flooded in. And she said, I put my best tablecloth on it. And every week I bought fresh flowers. And I put my best teacups out. And I began to invite people over to just sit around the table with the beautiful cloth and the flowers and drink tea from those beautiful teacups that she said I had never noticed how beautiful they were before because I was too busy. And so the meetings began with conversation and reading poetry and just sharing life. And she later said that it was the greatest thing that ever happened to her, coming to terms with the adversary, the loss of all that she had, because it was the first time in her life that she had ever lived simply and beautifully. The first time in her life that she had ever savored tea from those beautiful teacups that she had always had and enjoyed flowers, smell them, looked at them, how it changed her life. I love that story. And then it's important that we not avoid that there is discord right now sometimes between family members and friends and community. Not to hard our head in the sand and say, well, it just doesn't deliver. Or as we used to say in unity all the time, cancel, cancel, cancel. Because it's still there. And what we don't deal with rears its ugly head at the most inappropriate times. But to sit down and talk about the differences that we have in a loving and kind and compassionate way. To let whatever differences there are be there in the light. And to heal whatever may have come up in that relationship that we have.
Never hide it. Always bring it out. And then I believe the most important, absolute most important, is to really remember who we all are. What do we teach in Unity? That we all, each and every one of us, is divine. That we are all here expressing God. That we are the hands, the feet, the voice, the ears, the love, the compassion of God in this world. Not just me, but you, and you, and you, and you, all of us. Even the person that we dislike the most, even the person that personifies all that is wrong, that person too. That's hard. But I don't believe we can ever come to a place of harmony and peace until we really get that. And of course, that's what Jesus said. What are we to do? To love one another. To love our neighbor as ourself. Because in doing that, acknowledging that we indeed are all one. And for the most part, living life out of the experiences, the history that we know. You know, there's the wonderful saying, if we knew better, we'd do better. So my prayer for all of us, for this entire country, for this world, is that we do take time to pray, to sit in silence, to ask for the wisdom, the strength that we need to meet each and every day, to be able to see things from the highest perspective. And then to come into agreement, not by giving up our beliefs, but by refusing to give up our power. By doing, as Charles Fillmore said, by having a positive, fearless attitude to live and stand in our beliefs. And then to bring them all out in the light. So any differences, discord, can be healed. And then to be able to look at each and every person that we encounter, looking past all the differences, all the seeming, the word evil keeps popping up, I prefer another word, but the appearance of that. And knowing that somewhere in there is that same Christ that you have, represented in a different personality, a different way, but that same divinity, that same ray of light from the Creator, from God. And I believe once we truly do that, that we will be at a place in this country and in our world where we can learn to live together in a united and loving way. The affirmation that we say each and every Sunday at churches, Unity churches all over the world, I believe really cements that about the relationship that we have with God that certainly expresses at the relationship that we have with each other. And when we remember that there's only one God and that we are all part of that one God, that we recognize the oneness. And so if you will affirm with me those words that we affirm each and every Sunday that we meet, that there is only one presence, and I know it's in your program, together, there is only one presence and one power in the universe and in my life. God the good, omnipotent. Amen.